You are listening to episode number 104 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We gotta hurry because E3's on. Welcome, all ladies and gentlemen, to episode number 104 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Gamera Jaron, the Thunder still suck. I am your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben. Joining me tonight, my stalwart, the assassin, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome to the show.
Oh, and just a quick shout-out, Yvonne Strahovski gets my official co-nomination for Miss Marvel. That's as a reference to last week.
I still think Jennifer Morrison.
So do I. It's a co-nomination.
Also joining me, not my uncle, Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
Yo! And I'd like to say something to DP. D to the P. Yvonne Strahovski is actually a pretty good actress. She's too hot, and she's too young for Carol Danvers, but I could buy her as Mockingbird. I could totally buy that.
Oh, shit. That's
Runner. And oh, yeah, also the Spider-Lantern, same thing. Yvonne Strahovski, Mockingbird. There you go.
And, of course, our resident Green Lantern, because he's gay. Arnold, welcome to
the show. Hey, Iron Man, how you doing?
Hi, Iron Man. I can't be North Star. I'm your husband. That's so
You get to be a rich billionaire with a boy toy.
This is Marvel, and we're against marriage.
No, Marvel isn't against marriage. They just married two mutants.
No, if Arnold's anybody, he's got to be the Rawhide Kid. Come on!
No more. Oh my god.
Well, ladies and gentlemen.
Come on, that'd be an awesome costume! Dude, that's gonna be your next costume!
No. Oh god, no. Oh my god.
I love this show.
It's 104 times, and only 99 of them I wanted to choke Taser.
Hey, choke what?
Well, just in case this is your first time listening, we are the Mighty Warriors Team Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether it's comics, movies, TV, video games, cartoons. This week included tennis shoes and
porn.
Porn coming soon. I don't know when, but
coming soon to Mighty Warriors 3.
Coming soon all over your face.
Handkerchief near you.
But I want everybody, this is not going to be a regularly show. Normally what we do is we talk about the news, which will still happen. But after that, we talk into this week's books. As you know, May has the fifth week, which is why AVX didn't come out this week, but it's coming out next week because of the whole fifth week thing. It throws off schedules. So
basically, all this week's releases were either crap or crap.
It was really light. It was really Marvel light. So I've been wanting to do this special show for a while, and this is Retro Show or Retro Week for the Mighty Warriors.
The disco music.
In which
Let's
we'll
do
be
the time warp again.
Thank you for giving me an idea. So basically, instead of reviewing, say, Wolverine X-Men number 11 or Incredible Hulk number 8, which is the worst single issue of the year so far, we're going to be reviewing a book from the past between 1987 and 2004. I believe it's 2004, yes. So if you haven't read those issues, this is something for us to do different. You know, you can only review the same books over and over again so many times, so this is our chance to do something different, do something fun, and if you like what you hear, let us know, and we might do this again sometime when we think the week is absolute shit, and we'll just review a book from our past. So without further doubt, not retro, but a storyline that happened, 3 years ago, we got our first image from Iron Man 3, which is going to star Robert Downey Jr., of the Iron Patriot armor.
Dun dun dun! Boom!
Boom!
For those of you who don't know, the Iron Patriot armor was the armor created by Norman Osborn right at the beginning of the Dark Reign storyline to mock Tony Stark, and he used his, not all of his technology, I don't think he could get all of it, but the design of it.
No, I think he got the ghost from the Thunderbolts to unlock the
bolt. But not the repulsor tech. He didn't have that. But basically,
no, actually, it was Iron Man armor. He didn't make any of it. He just repainted it.
Well, yeah, but it wasn't. He didn't have access to repulsor tech or something. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't remember the story.
Because that shit comes like standard or something, like in a car.
Yeah.
Like, standard repulsor tech.
Either way, this is the Norman Osborn armor he wore all during Dark Reign and into Siege and until recently. So, yeah, and turns out that particular armor is going to be in Iron Man 3. Now, we've heard rumors that Iron Man 3 storyline is going to focus a mix of between Armor Wars, which is a great, fantastic storyline, and you should read it, and Extremis, which is where Tony Stark fused himself with a biological thing that allowed him to buy his armor biotechnology. There you go. That's the word I'm looking for. So it's going to be
biosynthetic fusion.
It's like Mass
nanobots.
Effect. So with that, Brian, I'm going to steal something from you because I completely agree with you. I don't think that, one, this isn't Norman Osborn.
It can't be. Sony owns those,
yeah,
rights.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not Norman Osborn. So all you people jizzing that this is the way they're going to get Spider-Man, no. It's not Norman Osborn. It's
newbies.
I think it's going to be, because it's going to be Detroit Steele.
Obviously, you're going to be Detroit.
It's just that maybe
the
they didn't want
to.
He's a character that Matt Fraction created.
Created by Hammer Industries to rival Tony Stark.
Yeah. So, in the comic, he's like a big, he's oversized. Like, he's like a 80s mecha robot, but more update. So, instead of doing that, they've gone with a carbon copy of Iron Man and just painted him red, white, and blue with the star chest. At least it looks like they're going to the movie. It's hard to tell from a picture frame, but the Detroit Steel armor, as I'm going to call it now, is going to play a big factor. I just think they want to show as many armors as possible because I don't think he's even going to be the main villain. There's no way you can have Iron Man just fight himself again. We saw that with him in War Machine.
Yeah, plus Detroit Steel wasn't much of a character
it was just a look.
Yeah,
it was just a look. And
it was mostly the Hammer girls behind it, like Sasha,
yeah,
Hammer, and all that stuff.
He had women? All right.
Yeah.
Women just had him. They owned his soul.
Yeah.
So, all you people freaking out, I think it's fine. You know, granted, the Iron Patriot armor isn't the greatest thing they could have pulled from Iron Man history. I don't think it's going to play that much a big of a deal in the movie, but if it is, I'll eat my words in a year from now. So
let's get the Hulkbuster armor in there, huh? I want to see that happen.
No, you know what I really want to see? I want to see the stealth armor.
The all black one?
Yeah, but it's got to be updated. You know, they got to do something different with it nowadays because, ooh, stealth. I want to see him, like, not only turn invisible, but, like, fade or turn intangible. Something like, oh, that is hot! You know, something like that.
Yeah.
Like they did with, like, the helicarrier with the whole reflecting plate
exactly.
Shit or something like
something
that.
Something like that. You
well,
know,
he was on the shield hair carrier. Who knows, he didn't steal those ideas.
That's possible.
So,
you wouldn't even need a flash drive. Just look at it. Got it.
So, Taser, what are your thoughts on the Iron Patriot armor just showing up in Iron Man 3?
Well, I guess answer that. Someone wake Grandpa.
It's a lame idea. I gotta be honest. I mean, first of all, I gotta be honest. The image that I saw, you know, it didn't look to me. Okay, it looked kind of like the Iron Patriot armor, but it also looked like that armor that Osborn had made for Harry in the comic. Remember that?
Oh, that, American Sun.
Yeah, it looked kind of like that to me, which is I was kind of perplexed by that. But you know, it had the face the face helmet deal, but like the rest of it just looked like American Sun. So I was you know,
America.
But yeah, see this. Okay, we've got our own Iron Man. Ho 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 ho. And yeah.
Okay. By the way, can I just ask this question? Who exactly is supposed to be? Is this supposed to be like the American government controls this one? Because I thought they controlled Rhodey pretty much. I mean, not like he put out that big of a fight.
Yeah, we don't know anything about this. He's just there.
Rhodey probably would keep it quiet about
it.
It
could be just a cameo, and it's just like a little wink. It could just be that.
Fair enough. That's true.
Yeah, that's true. I doubt
it though. I mean, you wouldn't put something like in there and it doesn't get used at some point.
Captain America shield circa Iron Man 1.
And make it wear
Iron Man 2. Hidden thing. That thing was hidden. You had to look really close to actually see that in the first Iron Man movie. You really
say that this isn't I don't know. I don't think it'll be nothing major. That's
possible because it's not out yet. We don't know. You got a point.
We got a long way before Iron Man 3 comes out in May. Arnold, what do you think of Iron Patriot in Iron Man 3?
I am completely perplexed by it. I'm curious as to how they're figuring that in. If it is a big deal or does become something major, I feel like it just screams, okay, the government got their hands on Tony's suit, it's all there. So now show that we have the real power of the Iron Man suit, and to downgrade Tony Stark, we're going to make it the red, white, and blue, because everybody loves the red, white, and blue. Like, that's just what that image yells out for me.
I gave that bitch a star-spangled armor. Bitches love star-spangled armor.
Exactly. You know, that kind of shit. So that's kind of what I'm expecting, and that's kind of what I feel, especially if we know Osborn's not going to be in it. That would be all kinds of a shock and actually kind of confusing, and I wouldn't really see the point of trying to even get him into that realm in any fashion and maybe try and turn him into an Iron Man villain or such. So I don't think that they're going to go that route. And we've seen a guy in it. Rumor has it that that's actually the dude who has a part in the movie. So who knows? It kind of looks cool. At the same time, it gets chuckles for me. It's kind of funny and amusing to see, like, in real life, how ridiculous that costume or that armor would have looked. Because it looked pretty fucking ridiculous in the comic book. And now seeing they're all bright and shiny in America, it still looks kind of ridiculous. But we'll see. I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent. We don't know anywhere near enough about what's going on in Iron Man 3 to be that kind of scared or worried about anything, in my opinion. So let me hear more story, cast, and et cetera, before I start freaking out about images that I see. It's way too early.
All right. And last but not least, Brian, what do you think of the idea of Iron Patriot and Iron Man 3?
Well, I think if they do decide to go that route, like you said, you know, they've already done Iron Man versus kind of himself and Iron Man 2 with War Machine and whatnot. So if this does pan out to be anything, I'll put my money on it being nothing more than the spearhead of the Armor War thing. So, you know, the lead drone, what does that mean? What does that even equal? I mean, but other than that, I don't see this playing too big a role. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before. But the amount of people that we have in this movie so far, I just hope they don't Spider-Man 3 the whole situation. God forbid that actually happens to this, you know? I mean,
God, who didn't like Sandman? I like Sandman.
It was the sheer volume of important people we were supposed to care about in this movie, and we ended up caring about almost none of them, so
I like Sandman.
You can like Flint Marko all you want, but the movie still sucked.
Agreed. And so that is why I think if they do decide to do this, don't try and invest too much time in Detroit Steel / Iron Patriot, because if they do, then this whole thing is just going to blow up in their face, and I really don't want that to happen with such a good, good movie series. Please don't do it. Please, God, no.
Oh, well, if it fails, we can just slash off Iron Man 3 and we just count Avengers as Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I just hope they don't sacrifice it to continuity like they did Iron Man 2. I mean,
I don't think so. Now that we're post-Avengers, I think the films are going to allow it to breathe.
Yeah, it's true, but we're also entering Phase 2, so we'll see how that works out.
Phase 2!
Which, you know, fucking most expensive Blu-ray ever, but damn.
Yeah, no shit. I'm going to have to buy that crap.
Ugh. I don't know if I'm going
to. You don't have to buy it. Movies. Just saying.
Taser, you pirate.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to something that's not as jovial as Iron Patriot. But remember, episode number 98. I just wanted General So Chicken. That's all I want. And then it was a rumor that Ben Kingsley was going to play the Mandarin. It was just a rumor. I'm like, okay, if it's just a rumor.
Well, get your big boy pants on, kids, because here comes the cold, hard truth.
You better get a bucket, too. It's going to be a shitstorm.
Ben Kingsley will be playing the Chinese villain known as the Mandarin. Already. Two strikes. Not even one. Two strikes.
No, you can't count this as two.
This is two strikes. This is fucking.
No,
this is that bad.
Not do that.
This is horrible.
No, it's the threat and then the promise.
Strike three is the execution, huh?
And again, Taser will back me up on this. The only reason we have a non-Chinese actor, or not the fact that it looks like the character itself is not even going to be from China. The fact is we don't have a villain from China being a main threat is because somebody said, we can't piss off the Chinese people, so we're not going to make him Chinese.
Piss off Chinese. We need their money.
It's.
I did it racist, and I don't care.
It's so Arnold, I know what you're going to say, but it's this fucking bullshit PC culture that I can't fucking stand. It's ridiculous. I simply point to Big Trouble in Little China. It's the fucking greatest movie of all time. It was all Chinese up the wazoo, and it was fucking awesome. Kurt Russell kicks ass. But the fact, it shows the sign of the times we're living in, and I don't want to accept it. I hate the fact that I'm going to have to.
I think what sticks up there.
It's just so stupid. I hope they don't call him the Mandarin. If they go the entire movie and not...
What if they just called him Ten Ring?
That's fine. Then he's not the Mandarin.
Ring Man!
To me, he's not the Mandarin.
Ring
I don't
Master.
Care. I don't care what the movie says.
Maybe they can call him Fu Manchu. That wouldn't be too offensive, right?
I don't care what the movie title says. I don't care what Ben Kingsley is playing. He is not playing the Mandarin. That is not
the
man.
Might of food,
he's
man.
Not playing it. I'm sure Ben Kingsley's a nice guy. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's a phenomenal actor. He's not the Mandarin. He's not what I imagine for a person to being the Mandarin. He's
so what you imagined was a guy in like a little hat and mustache going on.
I love how you're trying to paint me as a racist here.
Charlie Chan.
I love how you're trying to do that.
Well, you're trying to paint everyone else as tender-toed PC people, okay?
Why do you
Look,
think
back
we're...
to the
that is what the
no,
decision is.
This is the decision.
It may be. The fact is, you cannot market a racial caricature to a to
he
one
doesn't
of those
have to be a racial caricature. He has to be from. He has to be Chinese. His whole thing has to be. He's from China. That's where he's based from. His look, his lair, everything has to be China. The fact that he's not from China is bullshit. He doesn't have to be stereotypical. Oh, how can I help you with that? He doesn't have to be that. He doesn't have to be that. He just has to be from China. His background has to be from China. He was raised in China. That's where he finds the spaceship in China, or even, who knows even a spaceship where he gets the Ten Rings. It's if there even is a spaceship. If you don't know, Google it. I'm sorry. The fact that I'm
you do realize the guys also have British, right? I mean,
who was born
yes,
in China?
So what?
Who was born in China, and his whole stink.
So you have just as much claim to have him doing like the whole bucktooth, hey, governor type deal that you do the Chinese little, oh, how can I help you thing, okay?
You
can't pick and choose your mental characters.
The Mandarin in the comic book, is he half English?
He is. He was born to an English mother.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you this. If I read the Mandarin, if I'm reading Iron Man comics, and I expect to see Mandarin, if I get Ben fucking Kingsley, and he does, if he does nothing Mandarin-ish, then they took my money from me, and they denied me what I've been waiting to see. That'd be as if they had the Avengers, who did no avenging, you know? You got me to the ball game, and then fucked the game up. To that point, I say, fuck you, Marvel, you bunch of pussies.
You know, and also I take offense into the idea that the Mandarin's going to be a manipulator. Fine, he does do that. But he also knows, okay, I have to step up to bat now. I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, which is why, who was it that said Andy Lau was going to be
in
it?
That was John. That was Gamma John.
Okay, see, now that's an awesome choice.
Yes.
That is an awesome choice. He's not stereotypical, the man is not one of those, because nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to have somebody up there and embarrass themselves just so that they could get a movie role. And
I don't appreciate you
him.
Doing that to me, Brian, for thinking just because I want Chinese doesn't mean I want that. I don't appreciate that, dude. Not cool.
Yeah.
Boo fuckity who. Go cry.
I mean, come on. Well, look at it this way. Do you think if they can change the Mandarin, could they change Tony?
No.
Let's make him black.
They wouldn't do that because he's their poster boy. And he's not Chinese.
Hero. You can change the hero. Look at Avatar. They made, rather than go with an all-Asian cast, they went, hey.
They got Asif Manvi for the most fearful villain of all time.
You know, let's make the lead character, let's make him Caucasian. Because that'll sell. And the movie fucking bombed. As well as
The Last Airbender? Yeah.
Yes.
Don't even get me started on the whole race. And
thank you.
I just don't want to talk about it anymore. Because
so
talk
then
about
why
that
is thing. It okay? Why is there outrage
Shut
now?
Up.
But I can't have outrage here for the Mandarin. Why can't I
Because
have
what you're doing is you are ignoring the blatant recasting of race and culture all throughout all these superhero movies. For not even Marvel, just superheroes in general. Superman and Batman are both British. Green Hornet's Canadian. Thor is Australian. Heimdall is a black man.
Let's be real here. When people read the Mandarin in the comics, they don't fucking think British people. They
and people
think
don't
Chinese.
Think an Australian guy when they read Thor, but you know what? They went and saw the movie anyway.
Hold on, the green. Seth Rogen is Canadian?
Yes, he's Canadian.
Did he play a Canadian?
He played Green Hornet, an American.
Right, so he wasn't playing a Canadian. So what the fuck does it matter? Where he's from doesn't matter. He's playing an American. That's fine.
And Ben Kingsley is going to be playing the Mandarin, a Chinese villain.
What? He's a native Chinese villain. Okay, look. If they got, I don't know, Rob Paulson, who's half Filipino and half Jewish to play it, would that be fine?
Who the fuck is Rob Paulson?
I mean, not Rob, what the fuck? The guy
Manny
that does
Pacquiao.
All...
If they got Manny Pacquiao to play the Mandarin, there you go.
Is he half Chinese?
He's Filipino.
Okay.
Point is, you suck.
I don't suck. Y'all are ignorant, okay?
We just want something and we're tired. We don't like this bullshit PC culture.
That's really what it is, man. Come on.
We're not racist. I'm sick and tired of people calling me racist because I happen to want a villain from
China. If they came out and confessed it was all about money, would you be as pissed as you are now?
At least they'd be honest.
But we already know part of that is about money. That's like the thing.
It's blatant that they're doing it for money. They're not going to shut out one of the biggest markets in the world for a villain.
How many people out there in the world right now are making movies for the pure love and joy of making films?
Really?
And what makes you think that China would be upset because the lead villain, who's a 40-year-old character, is Chinese? What makes you think they'd be
upset? Who said that? No, Ben said that. That was it.
You're
saying that it's for money, so obviously this is the decision that they've come to where, oh, Lord, we can't piss off the Chinese because we needs their money. So
that's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Well, you know what? Maybe they just did testing and it didn't test so well. You don't know what they did.
Testing?
You don't know what they did. Okay,
we barely started chatting.
You don't have any.
This guy's supposed to be Chinese, but we're gonna stick a British Indian guy in there.
And how call him the Mandarin.
Hey, they got it half right. He is half British. You know, there's that.
Yeah,
so,
I know. He's
there.
British by way of India.
They got it half right. So
because India is in Asia, so he's actually Asian.
So there's 3/4 right. Hooray.
Should have been Chinese. Arnold, you talk.
We could go on and on and on and on and on about this till
I'd make him black. Fuck it.
Everything. You know, so the ends of the earth. One, as much as we hate to think about it or wish that it wasn't true, Marvel is owned by the mouse.
That's right. It's Mickey's fault. Fuck Mickey Mouse.
Is fucking
fuck him.
Everywhere. Everywhere. There is no continent you can go to where there is not a Disney World or Disney something that you can get to.
Antarctica?
So, again, I won't blatantly say it because nobody ever comes out and says it with the exception of a slight few stupid people, maybe. It's about money and branding and marketing. I've just gotten to the point now where as much as I hate it, look, at Last Airbender, I was some people annoyed by it too. It's bad enough that you couldn't get any Asian actors to play a lot of the main Asian roles, but on top of that, all of the good people were white and all of the bad people were brown.
Who else loved the white Eskimos? Just asking that.
They do it all the time. Could they have gotten an Asian actor or somebody of the correct race or nationality to play the role? I'm sure they could have. There are tons of brilliant actors and actresses out there. There are some phenomenal Japanese, some phenomenal Chinese, some that I've seen. Why don't they do it? God only knows. One, they, again, the money. Two, they try to blame the audience or the general public at large because they say, oh, nobody wants to go see an all-Asian this or an all-Asian that, but they're totally okay with seeing an all-Asian cast when it's a kung fu flick. You know, it's just, it's gotten to the point where it's such a tired argument because you know it's going to happen all the fucking time. And it'll continue to happen because you've got uptight people all the time. No matter what you do in movies, you will offend somebody or offend a group of people. There's some dumb jackass complaining that Avengers offended adopted people because of that line that Thor used in it. People are stupid. Fucking stupid and uptight. And
where the hell did you hear that? Seriously, who the hell said, who was stupid enough to come out and say that?
So you will piss off people.
Flash
no
cafe.
Oh my god.
If you make all the races correct, people will bitch about it. If you make all the races wrong, people will bitch about it. You change, you know, people always fucking complain about shit. And at the end of the day, hate it as much as we want to hate it. It's not going to change the fact that it is all about the paycheck.
You can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all the people all the time.
Unless you give them free chocolate.
Think from a business aspect, and you know for a fact the way your market is, and you have a guaranteed $1 million moneymaker with the person who may not be the exact race, and you're taking a gamble with the person who is, more often than not, they're going to go with the one who's the sure thing.
I don't see why. I just think Ben Kingsley is a fine, fine actor. I think he'll do a wonderful job.
Nobody said he wasn't.
Well, you know what, Iggy, fuck, I hope they bill him by his real name, Christian Pondit Banji. I hope they bill him as that, just throw it in your face.
Is that how it was? Because I thought it was Kafakan Banji.
That's racist.
Let's move on to something, because Lord knows I hate this. Two strikes. Okay. Two strikes. Movie hasn't come out yet. Two strikes.
It's guaranteed you're not seeing this movie because there's barely been any filming yet and you're at two strikes. We'll let you know how.
I don't like this.
Dos strikes.
I play Mexican
Wait
baseball
until
with their
you
seven
see it
strikes.
Happen, okay?
I play Mexican baseball with their seven strikes, so I'm still good.
Now who's bringing race into it?
What?
Yes, get to the next
that's
topic.
Fashion.
That's right, folks. Fashion.
So let's move on. Apparently, Marvel has teamed up with Reebok to do a line of shoes. And not much talk about, but I'm not gonna say. Whenever I hear superheroes and shoes, I think ones when I wore when I was five, and they had Spider-Man, they light up when I walk, and I was cool.
No, that's not what they're like.
Yeah,
at all.
You were.
No,
cool.
No. What I'm saying is, I think of superhero shoes. But I've seen some of these. I would wear some of those in public because sometimes whenever you, I don't necessarily am the kind of person that wears super memorabilia. On whenever I go out, I just don't do it for some reason unless like I'm going to a convention. But like day-to-day things, I just don't do it, especially superhero shoes. But these actually look like, okay, I can pass them by as normal shoes.
They're regular sneakers. They're just the become themed.
Exactly. But like so many times when I think superhero shoes, I think for five-year-olds. But it looks like it's cool that they're designing shoes for a older market.
That's what makes me the happiest. They have the fucking pump on them.
The kids with their pumps.
So I'll buy a pair if they're not ridiculously expensive, because Lord knows I never pay more than $20 for a pair of shoes.
Do they have size 15s? Because unless they got size 15s, I'm not wearing any.
Taser, what do you think about this?
Like I said, do they have size 15s?
I don't think they make one.
They haven't released any of the sizes yet, Taser.
Okay, unless they have size 15s, then I
Are
don't
Are you buying
give
Walt Simonson
rat.
Thor shoes?
They don't have Thor.
Like I said, if they have size 15s.
I know, that's the one thing about it. If fucking Chamber gets a pair, but Thor doesn't have a pair of sneakers, neither does Storm or...
No, screw that. What about Hermes? Come on, I want some wings.
Go all Namor with Namor? It, just kind of.
Yeah. I want to fly. I just want to fly. You know, I want something that's going to make you look shoom, like I'm moving.
It's in the swoosh. Oh, that's Nike.
But yeah, but you know, unless I can wear a pair, the fuck I care. So I'll give a rat's ass when I see that they've got large sizes. If not, if they top out typically like
okay, every time
13,
I think every time I think of you, you're getting taller. Now you're like 7'2" now.
I'm 6'2". My foot size.
Thank
is
you for crashing my dream. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I could give you another measurement. Might make
yeah, Ben.
What do you think of? What do you think of? I missed something, Brian. What do you think about these shoes?
I think a few of them are really cool pairs. I'm definitely getting the Deadpool pair. It's not even funny. I got to pre-order that shit. But, you know, a few of the pairs don't look as bad as you would expect them to look, I guess. I mean, the fucking Black Widow pair has the freaking straps over the tongue or some shit, and the Wolverine pair just looks god-awful, but pairs like the Deadpool or the Sabretooth pair, they don't look half bad. And the Captain America one doesn't look too bad either, so I'm definitely down for a couple of these pairs. The only one I know if I'm getting for sure is Deadpool, but other than that, they don't look half bad. And I do like that they're gearing more towards an adult market, because the only pairs I've really seen are kids and those fucking skinny-ass Converse pairs, which fucking I hate. I hate Converse.
Oh. All right, Arnold, did you have anything else to say on the subject?
No, they look great. Felix, I'm sorry you hate the Converse one. I like Converse sneakers, so those don't really bother me, but these...
Well, no, it's not that I don't hate them, it's just that they seem so, like, small and flimsy that it doesn't
they
seem...
They're really not, like, super firm walking around shoes or anything like
no,
that.
No, yeah, wait, I'm a big-ass dude with some big-ass...
You can't talk bad about Converse, because Converse... Shownuff wears Converse, okay?
Shownuff. Who the hell is that?
I don't know who Shownuff is.
You've never seen
The Last Dragon? Shownuff with Converse, okay?
I've never seen Shownuff.
I'll hook you up.
Watch The Last Dragon.
The movie or with the shoes?
The movie. And he talked about the shoes. Shownuff with Converse. Kiss so don't Converse. Be dissing the Converse.
Converse. From No, I'm thinking of Pure Flyers. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, it says they're also coming out with a Spider-Man themed pair. So there's that. For all you Spidey freaks.
I'm not going to buy them. All right, so let's move
there's
on.
There's more than one Spider-Man fan in the audience, Ben.
Okay. Yeah, there's Spider-Lantern.
And me. Yeah, but does he really matter? Okay, I'm sorry.
So let's move on to our...
one of our four fans.
Retro Week.
We just lost a fourth of our fan base.
Spider-Lantern will never leave us. We treat him too good.
You eat us!
So yeah. Let's move on to our finally retro week or retro episode, whatever.
Back to the 90s.
All right. So I already explained the premise to begin with. Let's go to the oldest first. Taser with DP something annual number one. No, it's not Deadpool.
No, say it again.
It's Darth Primus to the seventh power. Anyway. DP7, Displaced Paranormal 7, was part of Marvel's New Universe lineup. And they managed to put out one annual in 87, and which was basically starts off with a guy driving his way home. La, 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 la. Actually, he talks about Microsoft, which is kind of freaking weird because in 87, I didn't know what the hell Microsoft was. Funny how things change in like a couple of years, but anyway, he's driving home. Blah, blah, blah. Hey, what's that bright light? Can't see. Crash, boom, and you know he's on a slab, and wife and daughter like a doctor. Please, let my husband die. He wouldn't have wanted to live like this. Beep, 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 boo. And then he wakes up. No, don't turn it off. What the hell? Turns out my man is a ghost. And, you know, he has the typical, this is a new sensation. I can't interact with anybody, but I can hear everything, and they can't see me. Oh, wow, this sucks. Oh, well, let's go see what's going on in the world. So, basically, this character goes, and he feels himself drawn to the seven characters that make up this, I don't want to call it team, let's call them a group, because they more or less, during the course of the book's run, they kind of stuck together through various things, and we get to see, quote-unquote, their origins. You know, everything in this version of the new universe started with the White Event, which, as it turns out, ended up being the Star Brand, which was another new universe character, trying to get rid of his power. But this guy did it all the way out in space. He basically, you know, put all of his power into a meteorite, and it cascaded over Earth. You got the White Event. People started sparking abilities. He apparently would have probably had the ability to step out of his body, astral project, whatever you want to call it, but he died, and it left him in this state. So anyway, he goes around, and he's drawn to the seven individuals that make up, you know, the group, and you get to see Lenore, who was an old lady who basically, she leeches vitality from people through her skin. You know, it gives off like a narcoleptic effect, and she feels stronger. Then she goes and she sees the other girl, Stephanie, who's like, imagine a power booster. You know, she can supercharge people. And she goes and she sees Mammoth, which was a guy who, Mastodon, excuse me. Mastodon,
I love that band.
Right? He was a normal-sized man, and he just grew into this big, you know, Paul Bunyan guy, you know, just dense muscle. I can pick up a car, and look at my beard, and, you know, no matter what, he kind of had the Wolverine effect where, it's funny, the hair left the top of his head and went to his mustache and beard, you know? And no matter what he did, he couldn't keep that hair down. It would just keep growing back. But, you know, he could actually take a bullet, and it didn't do much. It would just kind of bury itself in hair. And, you know, he, like I said, he goes and he visits all the other characters. He visits Randy, and he visits Jeff. Jeff was one of my favorite characters. Jeff was, he was a speedster, but in typical Marvel fashion, he was a speedster with, like, real-world limitations. So Jeff, who was a fat guy, okay, I can kind of understand that, he sparked, and he couldn't keep himself still. You know, he had to move. And where the ghost comes in, he actually follows him as Jeff is running. And Jeff's... And when he comes back, he's like, wow, I think I lost some weight. And holy crap, I'm sweating all over the place. But I'm hungry. And this becomes part of Jeff's deal. Eventually, he gets to the point where he's like... He has a runner's physique, but even when he's sitting still, he can't sit still. He's vibrating, you know? So whenever you actually read the book, Jeff did that, like, flash trick where, you know, his face was always blurry, so you never got a good shot of him. He's always doing that, even when he sleeps. It follows around, and you get to see their origins because, you know, people like an origin story. Until he gets to Randy. Randy was a guy who could give off, what do you call them? I think antibodies. And they could go around, and they never talk, but they could spy for him and do things. And one antibody can actually see the guy. And he had been doing this for a while, apparently, with no form of contact. And this thing reacts to him. Like, you can see me? Please, don't go. No, don't leave me. You won't leave me? I'll kill you! And, you know, he, you know, damages the thing, and it looks like it dies. And then he goes, oh, no, what have I done? Oh, my God! So he goes back to Randy in the hospital. Randy is a doctor. I'm sorry, I should have said that. And he tries to jump in his body, and he can actually take over, you know, Randy's body. So right there, I'm thinking, possibilities. But then, of course, the antibody, you know, manages to make its way back, and, you know, Ghostly Dad steps out, antibody goes in, and, you know, Randy's like, what the hell happened? Why am I on the floor? And, you know, it ends with basically the lead character, his name was Nelson Kohler. I actually had forgotten, I had to look it up quickly. It ends with him accepting his new existence, you know, and then just going about taking a look at what's going on in the world right after the White event. And it wasn't bad because this would technically happen, I don't know, before Starbrand 1. So basically when the new universe started, we've already had everything, but this happens before everything. And he shows up again, and I believe it was the Pit, which was the second, well, actually the same Starbrand, depending on how you view things, his attempts at getting rid of the Starbrand, and this time things don't go as well. The first time Starbrand tried to get rid of his power, he flew out into space and tried to put it all into like a meteorite. You get the White event over Earth. This time he tried to do it in a dumbbell hovering over Pittsburgh, and he eliminated Pittsburgh. Just a big, giant crater, you know? And, well,
is that what was in the Dark Knight Rises? Because I was wondering what the hell that was.
Hey, you never know. But,
Batman, DP. Oh, God. You
know, I'll say this. This was good reading, you know. This is the stuff that, that pulled me in, you know. We got, and I'm actually gonna say who actually put the book together, because you know I don't really do that. You had Mark Gruenwald, who I gotta admit I loved a lot of his stuff. You know, as it turns out, he did Quasar. I freaking love Quasar, you know. He also did a bit of Avengers at the time, which was good stuff. Len Weeks is a penciler. Tony Desugnia? I don't know. And Paul Beckton as colorist. There was a lot. Ralph Macchio as editor and Tom DeFalco. These were good times for me, you know. So reading this book, this actually takes me back a bit. These books were a little more introspective. A whole lot more word balloons in regards to, you know, thoughts and what have you. Good stuff, you know. I miss books like this. They're not the same anymore. Everything's, you know, more fast-paced and kinetic. Not as much introspection. And given I'm not really one like that, you know, I'm like, I don't think. I just do and go, oh, it broke, I'm sorry, and just move on. I miss this type of storytelling. You know, it's a long time. It's good stuff, though.
Yeah, I think a couple of years ago, Marvel recollected. I don't know if they got up to this, but I know they recollected some of the New Universe stuff from the 80s. And, of course, Warren Ellis, 6, 7 years ago, did a reimagining of the
New Universe. Yeah.
New Universal. So if you're interested in what Taser thought about, check those out. I'm pretty sure you can find them. I'm up next, considering I'm next in line, with... It's probably the biggest cop-out, but X-Men number 1, circa 1991, October 1991, precise to be precise. This is Chris Claremont and Jim Lee. Now, Gamadron, I know a lot of people and today, for some reason, like, why is Jim Lee such a big name? You know, keep in mind, Jim Lee had been on Uncanny X-Men for, I believe, at least 3 or 4 years prior to this. But you want to know why Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee are on books now? It's because they're the last two artists that the mainstream public so remembers.
Well, there's that, and Liefeld sold us to Mephisto for a deal with Comics.
No, in the fact that, like,
Blue Jeans commercial. Don't forget the Blue Jeans commercial.
I know people who ask, who know me now, like, at least older people, like, is Rob Liefeld still doing anything? Or is Jim Lee still doing anything? Jim Lee was a name. Like, not just within comic circles, but people outside. I mean, if you look at the X-Men cartoon, those are his designs.
They didn't look it.
I thought it was Image that gave him their household name status.
This is the beginning of it. After.
No, so I know how Image got started. He only did three issues of X-Men, then he left.
But this is the beginning of it. This is what I'm saying. This is why. So this is the first X-Men number one since, I believe, the book came out in 1963, sold over, I think, 5 million copies. You had, like, several different covers, and, of course, the Gatefold cover, which is what I have. And this is the beginning of the end of the Chris Claremont era after 30-some-odd years because of clashes with Jim Lee, apparently. I don't know. The rumors are always you believe who you want to believe. But basically, this, for what it is fucking phenomenal.
It was a good book.
It was very – it's action-oriented. Jim Lee, this is, you know – Marvel, I think last year, re-released this with digital coloring. Don't buy that version. Buy the old school so you can see it in its authenticity. You know, it's kind of weird because it's playing up. This is right after the fall, either right before or after the fall of the Soviet Union. So, you know, the Russians are playing a big villain in this, and they're referencing Magneto in X-Men number 200. You know, it's basically a standard story. You get the team together. You form the idea of the blue and gold teams. Wolverine's on one team, Cyclops and all these other things. It's basically a big showcase for Jim Lee drawing the majority of the X-Men characters. Huh?
I said, Schism? Is that you?
Yeah, I mean, people drew comparisons to it back to Schisms to this now. But like I said, this is me just doing a Jim Lee love fest. And I know Darth Primus agrees with me on Jim Lee. And if you look at his sort of dynamic way he drew panels, just the energy, the sheer energy that's coming off the pages, just by looking at him, just everything about it, something's happening.
Speed lines.
And it's extremely detailed. It's not photo referencing. It's very detailed cartooning. And you'll see why he was considered back then, and even to a lot of people now, one of the best artists working, you know. You gotta, at this point, before this comics, the style was pretty much smooth line safe. Jim Lee's one of the next couple of, like, you had indie comics, but in terms of mainstream superheroes, that's what it was. This was a time where you started to see different styles, or at least not different, but edgier styles coming out, a rougher line, a harsher line, and Jim Lee's one of the people leading that way. You know, Wolverine smoking a cigarette, which you can't have that now, because Joe Quesada poo-pooed that idea.
Are you serious?
Yeah. You know,
he doesn't smoke in the comics?
Yeah, he doesn't smoke in the comics. He drinks beer, but doesn't smoke.
No smoking in comics by anybody.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but basically, I'm not going to lie, the story is decent, but I really just wanted to talk about the art. The sheer amount of a love I have from Jim Lee stems from this, especially the last double page spread of Magneto facing the X-Men, ready to go into battle. And if you buy the gatefold cover, you get like pinups, so you get him drawing all the X-Men, all the villains, and like a preview of things to come, including my favorite creation of his, Omega Red. This isn't the book that broke the comics market. That happened several years later. But if you want to know why Jim Lee is still a name and why they put him on Justice League and why they promote his name and why people still remember him from 20-odd years, this is why. This is one of the reasons why. You know, I don't think hardly people remember Wildcats, but they remember X-Men number one. They remember those covers and the gatefold covers. They remember it. They remember his style. So, yeah. I know Darth Primer checked it out, but if you haven't, for one, don't pay more than $2 for this issue, because you can find it for $1. No offense, if you paid more than $10 $2 for this issue, you kind of got ripped off, because I got it for $1 at my LCS, in really good condition. So, overall, if you want to know why Jim Lee is considered one of the best by a lot of people, including me, this is why. This is why. Jim Lee rocks.
At the time.
He still does. I still think he does.
He started, you know, going, oh, I got work to do, but I don't feel like doing it right now. I'm going to wait a little while.
Well, I'm not going to get into that with you right now. So let's move on to Brian, who has another story, a Garth Ennis written Spider-Man story.
Tell us this crazy story. Okay, this is Spider-Man the 1000, issue number 1, by Garth Ennis. We start off on a typical day in New York City, where Batman, what is it? Off to a great start. That would be better if it was Batman, but I'll get into that later. Spider-Man is battling the Rhino, you know, public damage, all that stuff, you know. And then we see this one guy who's sitting in a diner just kind of watching the fight happen. Way too calm about it. And what is it? He's kind of like, you know, doing the whole internal monologue thing, how he's mad at Spider-Man, who he seemingly knows is Peter Parker, by the way. He says that he's living his life and that he wants what's his and so and so. We come to find out later in the story that this guy is apparently a guy named Carl who used to pick on Peter back when he was a kid. We're not getting much more than that in the first issue, but just on a side note, Peter had the worst fucking Urkel glasses when he was a kid. I mean, really. Just the way he deserves to get punched in the face for this shit. Like, really. Anyway, what really just gets me laughing about this issue is we eventually cut to a scene where Peter is just kind of kicking back at home, watching TV and stuff. And then Aunt May comes to him with just some laundry. Apparently he threw his Spider-Man costume in with the whites and it got all blended up. And she doesn't know, and so he plays it off. But this whole thing reeks of like a sitcom, like a bad setup type deal. It's like, Peter, did you try to do the laundry? And then it moves into this whole, she kind of goes all dementia on him and starts reminiscing with Uncle Ben for some reason. And then they start dancing. Yeah. No, like, no lie. What happens is she starts reminiscing about Uncle Ben when Peter's telling her about his plans for that evening. And then as he tries to tell her, she just suddenly goes off on a tangent about how Uncle Ben came home from World War II and she was waiting for him and stuff. And he was such a great dancer. And then she starts dancing with him. And it's just really weird and awkward. I don't know what the hell Ennis was thinking with that, but it made me laugh for some reason, just because I was looking around like, is this seriously what they're doing? Anyway, progressing the story forward from that, we got yet another girl who seems to take a fancy to Peter, whose name is Jess. She works at the Bugle, and she's trying to get his photos passed off to J. Jonah, who's apparently gotten sick of Spider-Man pictures, and she's trying to get it put into a story. And she's suddenly targeted by this guy, Carl. And what happens is he gets her alone in a closet, giggity, and he sheds his Carl suit and puts on Jess's skin Buffalo Bill style. Like, yeah. Seriously. Like, he hangs up Carl's bodysuit in the closet and just kind of walks out as Jess. Not even a fucking lie. And when she's all freaking out in the closet, who are you? Who are you? He answers with, I am the Thousand. And she screams, no! And then she gets put on the rack.
Nice.
Honestly, for a first issue, it made me laugh and got me curious all at once. I actually haven't gotten to read through the whole arc yet. I do have the other two issues. It's a 3-issue run. But as far as it goes with the single issue and Ennis writing Spider-Man, I don't know. Peter is almost feels like a secondary character in this issue with the attention he gives to the villain. So there's not as much like, you know, internal monologue with Spider-Man. There's not that much focus put on his character, really, let alone this Carl guy who seemingly becomes a woman at the end of the series. So I guess for a first issue, if you're looking for a Spider-Man story, you could find better, but, you know, it's Garth Ennis, and he's writing Spider-Man. It's definitely a different take than some of the other Spider-Man stories I have seen written by different artists, you know. And you know the ones who I'm talking about.
You know.
It isn't that bad. It almost reminded me a little bit of I'm trying to think of what the book was that Garth Ennis did. Yeah, I'm blanking. But regardless, it's a pretty decent book. Made me laugh a couple times with just how odd the thing was. And the artwork isn't that bad. For a solid issue by itself, I'll give it like a 2.5 out of 5. 2 out of 5, something like that. Oh, also, just one other quick thing. In the book, apparently Peter scored a date with a model. Don't know how that happens.
Garth, yeah. Thank you, crazy son of a bitch. All right.
Garth.
Last but not least, the 2000s representative of our era, the debut of Jim Chung, Young Avengers number one, Arnold. Take it away.
Oh, Ben.
Number one, and which
was 2001, buddy. 1000 was 2001.
He's reviewing the book. Leave it.
I made an exception while you were being late.
Now I'm sad.
It's okay. I still love it.
Andrew's sad.
Young Avengers number one came out in 2005. Right out of the gate, I just reread this before we started the show. And thinking back, I'm pretty sure with the way this issue opens, it's probably the question that was on a good chunk of people's minds when people mentioned this story when this book came out. And it starts with J. Jonah Jameson. Of course, it's got like the, you know, symboled out expletive, but J. Jonah Jameson right out the gate, who the fuck are the Young Avengers? So, and you know, this book, I was very much looking forward to. It came out around the time where the Avengers had just disbanded, all of that disassembled stuff happened, things like that. So there really wasn't an Avengers team proper, like, out on the market or even calling themselves Avengers. You start to see this ragtag group of kids gets together, currently named. You don't really know what their real names are, but you find out that they are Patriot, Hulkling. I think he is still Wiccan during this. Yes, he's Wiccan in this, and Iron Lad. These four heroes, they're trying to, you know, run out and save the day, as it were, in place of the Avengers. Most of this is being seen, at least right at the beginning, through the eyes of Jessica Jones, who used to work. I constantly forget that she used to work with the Daily Bugle, but going back and rereading this, this reminds me about that. And Jonah pretty much sends her on the mission to go and find out who these Young Avengers are. And she's like, why do I have to go? And he's like, well, they'll know you. You're a superhero. There's a lot of in-jokes to her being a superhero, and she's already pregnant at this point with Luke Cage's child. But she's making all the jokes about how she can't believe she actually wore that costume. J. Jonah Jameson actually pulls it up on the computer. This is back in the day when she was known as Jewel, if I'm not mistaken. And there was some other name that I forget, Night something or other. But it escaped her right now. It was a lot of fun seeing the answer back and forth about that, you know, and Jonah sending her out and even telling her that she should wear the costume. She's like, I'm not wearing the damn costume. Like, it's not going to happen. They bring up the fact that there are about 63 or so different fan sites dedicated to her, which kind of keeps her out of it. Another thing I found interesting in this, which kind of ties in some of the comments that Jessica Jones made in, I believe it was post-Civil War, or maybe even post-Brand New Day, where I think it was post-Brand New Day, where Peter Parker reveals who he is to the whole team, and you find out that Jessica Jones used to have a crush on Peter Parker back in the day when they were in school. She actually says in this book, when she was a little kid, she wanted to be Spider-Man. So I found that highly amusing. So we see these kids, they try to stop a robbery that is taking place at a wedding at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And as things do for newbies and or teenagers, they end up setting St. Patrick's Cathedral on fire, which I'm sure is helping tons of people. They eventually get people out. The cops try to stop them. They run away. They disappear. Meanwhile, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers have met up with Jessica, and they're both trying to figure out if I don't know who the kids were. They decide that they're going to need to stop them and figure that they make up at Avengers Tower. The rest of the team kind of disbands and goes home, and Iron Lad, who has been talking about they need to prepare for when this big bad shows up that he mentioned or even told the team about and why it's such a big deal, but he doesn't seem to let on who it is. So they all leave him, and he is staying at the old burnt down or blown up at our Avengers Tower, runs into Jessica Jones and Iron Man and Captain America, and they have a discussion. They're trying to figure out who he is. Captain America tries to touch Iron Man, and his suit reacts and almost makes like razor-sharp claws at Cap, and Iron Man tells him that the suit sometimes reacts before he can even think about it. Him and Tony have a brief conversation about how that technology is like 100 years advanced into the future, and right at the end, that's when we get the reveal that Iron Lad is none other than the young, soon-to-be Kang the Conqueror. The final list came out, I didn't really know that much about Kang the Conqueror, but I knew enough to know that he was a pretty big fucking deal. and somebody to be wary of. But this was the book that got me right on board with Young Avengers. I love this book a lot. From issue one, I never turned back. Unfortunately, the artists and the writers have gone other directions, or Marvel is using other people do it. But this book is a really fun read for me. I was about, what, 20 years old when this came out? 2005 was what, 7 years ago? Yeah, I'm sorry, I was 21 when this came out. I know it doesn't seem that long away, but in terms of comic stuff, it seems like a really far off time. But I love the hell out of this book. I would still love the hell out of this book, I'm sure, if it came back. But this one, this was Young Avengers for me. I was always a big fan of the teen books, even the X-Men when they were younger, or, you know, in terms of distinguished competition, the teen tens. I've always been drawn to teen books, and I like the dynamic of teen books. And the teen was great. It was interesting. I'm sure right out the gate, everybody thought it was going to be some form of Avengers sidekicks kind of deal, but that wasn't the case at all. There was more of the Avengers actually trying to stop these kids from being superheroes than they were actually accepting them to the fold. Even now, that's still kind of playing out where they're almost slightly untrustworthy, even though some of them have been on the Mighty Avengers and things like that here and there. But they were always kind of the outcast of the Avengers, for lack of a better term, which kind of drew me to them even more. But always a big fan. It was actually really good. I'm glad you brought up this kind of episode. I'm going to go back and read this, and I might even go back and read all the rest just for my nostalgia's sake. But looking back in retrospect, I would still say about 3 to 5, even close to 4.
All right, well, that's our retro special, and I really hope you guys liked it. Let us know what you think, and if you like it enough, even if you don't like it enough, fuck it, we'll do it again when I feel like it.
Yeah!
But if you really like it, that gives me more incentive to not wait for so long to do another one.
Say
so
you like it. Say you don't like it.
Screw you!
What? No, thank you. I had sex already.
Hey, isn't it nice to relive something every now and then?
Yes, I was with Alan Scott.
Oh, Big Daddy Dave, I love you.
Ion Fan, hi.
All right, well, let's move on to our final topic, which this is going to, again, another breaking of the norm. We don't normally ever talk about the distinguished competition unless it's in joking form, but this Wednesday begins the debut of the quote-unquote Before Watchmen event. Basically, if you've been living under a rock within the past...
Somewhere, months, Alan Moore just ate a snake right now.
Alan Moore. Every time somebody says Before Watchmen, he eats a snake?
Yes.
All right, so in case you don't know, Before Watchmen are the 7 limited series from DC Comics, basically prequels before the Watchmen graphic novel, a.k.a. the greatest graphic novel of all time, and all those other things, turned into a movie in 2009 by Zack Snyder. Zack Hack Snyder, as I call him. So I want to talk about it. First and foremost, the contract situation. He signed a contract. He knew what the contract was. Alan Moore has no moral ground to stand on, especially when in one of his books he had another character that he didn't own eat out another character, Lost Girls.
Yeah.
Did you say he ate out another character?
Eat out. Eat pussy.
Yeah, I know what it means, dumbass.
So
we weren't sure. That's why he had to, you know.
No, I want to know what book it was.
Lost Girls.
Okay, on my to-read list.
What company did that come out by?
It was an independent publisher.
All right.
So, yeah, no, buddy.
Yeah, no, it's. I've actually read it, but anyways, this is not that show. So, I'm front of the hand and. That all you've seen all these articles of these people coming out with DC just do this wrong. They're like, for one of all, and I've always stand behind this, Alan Moore does not own those characters. They are not his. He and Dave Gibbons signed a contract that said if the book goes out of print, they will get the rights back. Could he see the future of what? No. But the fact that he even thought about it, it said, okay, maybe it's gonna go out of print. I don't know, maybe selling so short, but point is, he signed a contract. He knew what the contract was. DC didn't screw around. That was the deal. From my understanding, it was mutual agreement. That was the contract. He has nothing to stand on. Nobody who's defending Alan Moore to me has nothing to stand on this. This isn't And just like I said with Before X-Men, you can ignore these. Just like you can ignore Star Wars 1, 2, and 3 and just watch 4, 5, and 6. You don't need them. You're not going to need these. You can still read and love Watchmen for itself as a standalone great comic book that it is. This, I'm surprised DC didn't do this when the movie was coming out. Don't you think it would have made more sense to do it then?
No.
When the movie's out, it doesn't make sense to do it then.
No.
Well, that could be said for a lot of things DC does, which doesn't, the least of which is Earth One, the Superman and Batman TPBs. They haven't really been very punctual with much of their stuff. That's just a recent example, but, you know.
Well, my point is, to do it, I mean, Watchmen is constantly selling on Amazon or anywhere. People are constantly...
It's the only graphic novel, I believe, on the Times 100 Best Novels list, if I'm not mistaken. The only graphic novel.
So, like, my point is, these are some of the best writers slash artists working in comics today, or at least under DC Comics contract. I think this could be... I don't think this is going to be a train wreck like a lot of people are predicting, Big Daddy Dave. I think this could be really interesting. It could be phenomenal, but just like everything else, it could be utter dog shit. But I think for people saying that Alan Moore is being raped, Alan Moore was wrong, DC fucks over Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons is stupid for letting it go. No. Alan Moore is bitter and hates everything about comics right now. People need to understand it. He doesn't think there are no such thing as good comics anymore. Any comics, not just superhero, anything at all. That's what he thinks. He's a extremely bitter man who was, and maybe a little bit rightfully so, by the film industry, and he hates everything. He's a very bitter old man.
He's not bitter. He's enlightened.
He's bitter.
He's enlightened.
If you're one of the people who thinks Alan Moore is in the rights, or that all these creators leaving DC or being fired from DC are right for taking the moral high ground, you're stupid. I'm sorry. Because there is no moral high ground. There is the contract, there's Alan Moore, there's Dave Gibbons, there's DC Comics. From my understanding, like I said, mutual agreement between all of them. So, that being said, before Watchmen, I'm going to check it out. I think it's going to be awesome, especially Darwin Cook. Amanda Connor is going to be doing art. This is going to be great. Arnold.
I'm not sure what part of the topic we're actually getting into. I feel like we kind of...
Just your thoughts on the whole situation in itself. That's why I brought Alan Moore into this, because it's part of...
People bitch for the sake of bitching. You signed a contract, and now you're pissed because you thought your stories are fucking sacred. If you want stories and your characters to be yours, then you shouldn't have let other people get the rights to them. Plain and simple. You knew what you were getting into. If people think that there's anything in comics, anything at all, and this includes everything up to including the death of Uncle Ben and Gwen Stacy, is completely sacred for forever, you are fooling yourself. If you think people aren't going to go back, whether you think there's any space for it or not, just take some story of yours and quote-unquote expand upon it. If you think that's not going to happen, you're a moron. It's a company, it's a business, if it's popular, people are going to want to add on to it and change things, and tweak this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, it's another one of those things, like, just, I don't know, shut up about it. Granted, was anybody really clamoring for a Before Watchmen? I don't think so. To be honest, I only read Watchmen maybe like a year before the movie came out, so I wasn't even read it way back when, but super fond of it. Some of the team on it looks great, so I may check it out. Should Marvel do anything like that, although I feel like that's what they're kind of aiming for with their Before X-Men, or as we're calling it now, the First X-Men, which again, who was clamoring for, who thought that, why is all of a sudden an X-Men team before? Like, why was that necessary? Who was clamoring for that? Whether it's in continuity or not. But again, at the same time, I read what I want to read. If it's something that doesn't interest me, I couldn't care less. And Before Watchmen, I'm kind of meh about it, to be honest. First X-Men, what's the point? There's nothing really, and I've heard some of the news about it. There's nothing that screams, oh man, I'm going to get this now. It's going to shatter everything that I know about the X-Men. I'm fine with what I know about the X-Men. Certain things you don't need to go back or reach. But if people want to do it, so be it. As long as it's not interrupting my current what I'm reading now to go backwards and tell a story, I'm looking at you, Howard Chaykin and Avengers 1959 in the middle of my comic book. It's a non-issue for me. Like, I can just ignore it because I just don't need to buy it at the store. I just move over to the next show.
All right, and Taser, I really want to get your thoughts because you were around when they were originally publishing Watchmen. Like, you were aware. You
back
were self-aware.
In 1908.
Oh, yeah. I didn't read Watchmen until maybe about a decade after it had been originally released, because at that time, what? This isn't Green Lantern. This isn't Superman. This is... Who the hell are these? Fuck it. But I started hanging out with people who actually read comics and started going to stores as opposed to me just picking them up in newsstands. Like you can still do nowadays. So people who, bitch and moan about the direct market kill comics, you can still find them in the freaking newsstand. So shut up. I got the book as in the trade, and I was, pleasantly surprised by the story that I was, I bore witness to. That being said, I was an adult having read the story. I didn't know about the deal that got made until many, 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 many moons later, to which point I initially thought, oh, wow, the company, they kind of screwed them over. They screwed over the artist, man. How could they do that? They screwed over the artist, dude. But then I actually read that never saw the contract itself. However, I did read an article that had an interview with Moore where he says that, yeah, me and Dave, we signed the contracts, knew what was going on, but we thought certain things were going to happen. And they didn't. So, oops, I can understand Moore's frustration to an extent. He thought certain things were going to go on and they didn't. But Moore has come across as somebody who sets a high level of morality in the things that he does and the things that he touches. And I believe he expects other people to meet them also. Like in the article I read, he talked about his great disappointment and displeasure with Dave Gibbons over going, they want to do a movie with Watchmen and we get paid? Give me money! Whereas he was like, but what about our characters? And it's like, fuck that, I want money, I ain't doing no books. Hey, make money. I can't really fight or hate on Dave or Alan Moore because I understand where he's coming from, but I also understand where Dave was coming from. I took part in this work. I signed this contract. Sure, the book never went out of print because the book was popular enough that DC could keep it in print. And they're simply adhering to the stated governing rules of the contract. You can't hate just because something didn't. You can hate, but it's not justified if something simply didn't work your way. If it was all hinged upon, if they had put a timetable on it, like, okay, you can do this for like 5 years, and then it becomes our work. Okay, hey, now you can hate, but that didn't happen. So I really, having become as informed as I am, and that's not to say I am 100% informed on it, on the matter. I can't hate on DC for this. I can hate on DC for a lot of things, fucking Jeff Johns, but this isn't one of them. It's really not. They knew what they were doing. They went in with their eyes open, and shit. You thought it was going to snow and it ended up raining, so you can't use your sled. So nothing else you can do, really.
So last but not least, Brian, the least caring man of the bunch.
No, I still have an opinion on this. I love Alan Moore because he is like the ultimate epitome of just, I don't want to say the terrible American, but he's a pretty good caricature of someone who knows full well what he's done, but still wants to bitch about it and think like he's in the right afterwards. I think that's awesome that he actually has the gall to go and try that, because as much as I respect Alan Moore as a storyteller and as a creator, he needs to realize that nothing is sacred. The only thing I think everyone universally would be pissed about would be if someone brought Uncle Ben back to life. That's about the only thing I can dare think of, and I'm not even sure if that's a universal thing, because people who don't like Spider-Man wouldn't give a shit. But, you know, it's not new to, you know, take something and then expand upon it or redo it or whatever, you know.
George Lucas.
Not even that. Fucking Christianity is a rewrite of Judaism. I'm not trying to get all theological on you, but that's just how it is. People have been rebooting and rewriting shit since the beginning of time.
Council of Nicene.
Exactly. It's a story literally as old as the history of man. You don't like it? Go Jewish. They're the only ones who haven't rebooted their beliefs in pretty much ever.
Well, actually, they didn't really pervert their beliefs. They just kind of went, the Savior hasn't come, and, you know.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
The Savior came and you killed them. You know?
They're the only ones who haven't really changed what they believe in ever or what they've written, so you know what?
No,
you don't like it?
Entirely true, because you have Jews.
I said for the most part, but that's, listen, I'm not trying to start a religious debate here, okay? The point that I'm trying to make is the reboot, rewrite game is not something new. Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons both saw it when they were around playing with Watchmen to flesh out the storyline.
Christ and the Infinders just happened right before a little couple.
They had to have known their story wasn't untouchable. I mean, don't get me wrong, making the Time 100 Best Novels list and getting a Major Motion Picture, I mean, yeah, gives you some credit. And being Alan Moore, they get you a little bit more than most people do. But still, unless you go and you create the next, like, freaking universal philosophical belief system, which even then isn't a sure bet, you're not going to have an untouchable thing.
Remember the last guy that did that? Killed him.
Don't even start with me. Point is, Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons both knew what they were getting into, both when they signed over the rights and when DC started in with the mass media projection of Watchmen. They knew what was happening both times. They should have at least had a guess about what would happen. And Alan Moore, yeah. Okay, he wrote his stories. Dude, get over it, okay? Build a bridge and fucking get over it. Move on. There is more to do with your life than just bitching about your old stuff. People don't get stuck in the past. You wind up with bad results, okay? Work on something new. Create a new fucking masterpiece and then copyright that shit to yourself, okay? Don't sit there like a child complaining that someone took your toy away when you have a fucking whole toy box right behind you, okay? It's bullshit. You're an idiot. Make something new, you douche.
No,
considering that's what got that exact word got him fired from DC Comics.
You know what? I think it's poetic.
So yeah, last before we go, before Watchmen, are you picking it up? First Taser, are you gonna read the first? Are you gonna read any of them?
I'm on an embargo of DC Comics. Fuck no.
Okay, Arnold, are you gonna pick up any of them?
Initially, right now, I'd say probably not. Who knows what happened? That will change.
Brian, are you going to pick up any of them?
First issue is one by Darwin Cook, right?
Yeah, it's seven. He's going to be just doing that one series, right?
Okay, then I'll check out the first issue and like flip through it at the stand. But I make no promises to buy this. So
yeah, I'm checking out at least. JMS is doing Dr. Manhattan. I'm at least checking out Dr.
JMS.
I'm checking out.
Good.
I'm at least checking out Dr. Manhattan, Rorschach.
Dr. Manhattan has two twins illegally with Sally Jupiter's mother or something.
I'm checking out Dr. Manhattan, Minutemen, Rorschach, and Silk Spectre. So that's four of the seven.
Silk Spectre one, the X-rated one, because I'll read that one.
We don't know yet. It hasn't come out yet. I didn't mean for this to turn into Alan Moore rant, but it's part of the subject. What are your thoughts on Before Watchmen? To me, I feel like we should talk about this because it's that big of a deal. Watchmen transcends Marvel DC, in my opinion.
And hey, loyal listeners, when Marvel gets something we can equate this to, then we'll talk about that. But I don't think that'll be coming out for at least another year or so.
I might add something, though.
Sure.
On the subject strictly about Watchmen, I honestly think that it should have been left alone, personally. Because
seconded.
you know, okay, yeah, there's backstory that you can fill out with the Minutemen, but you don't really need it. I mean, nobody, the story doesn't really make you want to care about, well, what were these people's motivations into doing with that? Who cares?
You're right.
Everything, like, everything you needed was right there in the story.
Which is, it's like, which is true. You're, like I said with Star Wars, you don't need 1, 2, and 3 to like 4, 5, and 6. You don't need them. You're not gonna need these prequels.
You don't need it to like it. That's fair.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is, I'm gonna read it because I'm just interested in what they're gonna do with it. I like some of the premises behind these stories.
That's fair.
But if you say a person who doesn't want to read these at all, it's not going to affect what happens in the Watchmen book.
DC, oh, it should. Not at all.
It's not going to.
They're prequels, so, I mean, well,
that's what I'm saying. So, like, the best thing to do, and you're doing it because you're on embargo of DC, ignore button.
Yeah.
Which is like what I do with the Star Wars prequels. They are an ignore. Yeah. They don't exist.
I have a question.
Sure.
These are all limited series, like they have like set end dates and stuff. Yeah.
Some of them are 6, some of them are 4.
Okay, I would just want then whenever the 6th, I'm betting we're gonna see 6 months to a year after the 6th issue run ends, we're gonna see like an absolute Watchmen with all this shit jam packed together.
No, I don't think that's too many
issues. I guarantee it.
That's too many issues.
A Watchmen omnibus?
Pretty much. Woo! Yeah, I'll throw down for that.
That's too many issues.
Mark my words, 6 months to a year after this whole thing ends.
All right,
dude, you get Watchmen, you get all of the books put together, and you get the movie for only $19.95.
Thank you for linking it. All right, well, anyways, let's wrap it up there because I know it's running late. So contact us at the warriors3@gmail.com, twitter.com, just warriors3pcast. Please check out my other show that I do with Mr. Dragon, Chris Healy, a.k.a. Chris Healy, and Colto Clayton from the podcast Sentai Power Rangers podcast. We do a video game podcast called The RPG Show. Last episode, we basically talked Mass Effect 3, the fall of Final Fantasy, and what are we looking forward to E3, which is going on right now. So, yeah, we'll see y'all next week for episode number 105. Take care, ladies and gentlemen.
Send out news that you want them to put Taz Mission on the show. Do it. Do it.
Taz Mission V. Robinson. It's Ollie Foreman for the new generation.
The world looks...